You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Castrovince. This is our latest look at the Cleveland Indians, and I am joined in person by Jordan Bastian. We're here in Goodyear, Arizona. Good to see you, buddy.
How you doing? Welcome to Goodyear.
Oh, it's good to be here. I see it's really the development of Goodyear continues to be overwhelming. I see there's a movie theater now.
There's a movie theater in the middle of a field. Hopefully by next year there will be more buildings around it.
That's what they said about P.F. Chang's and Red Robin.
Still waiting for the buildings, the ballpark village to pop up between the ballpark.
Any
the
day
conference.
Now, the ballpark village is going to spring forth to life.
Yeah, I mean, I just think one of these mornings I'm going to get up and drive, and all of a sudden there will be all this development. But no, Goodyear looks pretty much the same.
It does look pretty much the same. The good thing about Goodyear, ample parking. You never have to worry
plenty of parking
about a parking situation in Goodyear. The only thing you have to worry about is getting into a turning lane to a road that does not exist.
Yes.
They have a lot of that in Goodyear.
Yeah, that happened to me a couple years ago, but now that I've been here for years, I've learned which of these roads they're hoping will continue to go much farther in the future. There's still just like, signs at the end that you would just run into a dead end.
Goodyear has some of its appeal, though. You can only find the good. You can find the good in any place.
Yes.
I found the good in Winter Haven. I found the good in Goodyear. I think, but in your situation, covering a WBC spring training, you better find the good in a place, or you're for a struggle.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you like hiking, you're pretty close to the White Tank Mountains, the Estrella Mountains. I'm not a golfer, but there's golf courses. There's things to do here. Some nice restaurants. We get into our routines. I've been here while the players have been gone at WBC. They had the trip to San Antonio that kind of threw off camp a little bit. There's been a lot of things this spring that have kind of thrown off that normal spring training rhythm.
Well, that's what I was going to get into. It has been a disjointed camp for a variety of factors, not all of them in the Indians' control, of course. But, yeah, you got the WBC, and I was at Cubs camp the other day. They lost Javi Baez to the WBC.
Right.
Okay, that's an important player, but that's it.
Right.
You know, whereas the Indians have had some very obviously important players. Carlos Santana just got back today from the Dominican team. Andrew Miller, of course, you know, the year Andrew Miller goes off with Team USA and they get to the final round. And he's, you know, snapping sliders out there ahead of schedule. And, you know, Lindor, of course.
And then even on a lesser scale, you know, they're right now trying to evaluate third base situation because of Jason Kipnis's injury and Giovanni Urshela missed time.
Yeah.
So a guy who might be the number one option to go to third now, he's just now like getting back to camp and getting back in the swing of things. And then a guy like Joe Colon with Puerto Rico, not a lot of people talk about him. He's kind of like a almost forgotten guy because of the situation, but he was supposed to be competing for that last bullpen job. So a lot of sort of, like, as you mentioned, disjointed is a perfect word.
And then the bumps and bruises on top of that.
Right.
Carlos Carrasco, as we're recording this on Monday, he's going to throw in a minor league game. Michael Brantley is getting in his first Cactus League game. It just hasn't been – it's not what you want, as Joe Girardi typically says to the Yankees media. It's not what you want to have a – you're not getting to see your product on the field on a consistent basis, which is what spring training is all about.
Right. And, you know, for example, when they had the trip to San Antonio, it was only two games, but – you had to manage filling out rosters for two games in San Antonio, so a travel squad. You had to manage filling out rosters for games here in Goodyear, where at least you have minor league camp where you can draw younger players up to just fill in those blank spots on the roster. And you're dealing with the fact that players are in the World Baseball Classic. When Chris Colabello came back from Team Italy, Francona was relieved because he said he literally had a blank spot at first base on one of his roster sheets. So when Colabello came back, like, Francona was the happiest to see him as he's like, I have a first baseman.
There you go.
Yeah.
My goodness. It's 162 games. I guess they'll figure it out over the course of that. But, certainly some frustration in this camp over those developments. But the good news, of course, Michael Brantley getting in the making his Cactus League debut. And, listen, we talk about it pretty much every week, so we're repeating ourselves, but you take these small milestones when you can get them, but best not to get too wrapped up in any one milestone and just look at the big picture, which is a steady progression.
Exactly. I have on my phone, I have one of those little apps, was it Time Hop, where it tells you like this day a year ago, this day 2 years ago, and it's kind of been funny to see every day when my tweets about Brantley were popping up from a year ago, and this morning I had a quote from Ty Van Berkelio, the hitting coach, from 1 year ago about how his swing looked Michael Brantley-esque, and it was so great to see him get back into games. And it was just an abundance of optimism at this point last year. And I think that kind of is a reminder of how, as Terry Francona used the word today, you kind of have to temper it. You have to temper that optimism because, as we've mentioned ad nauseum on this podcast, they've been down this road. Indians fans have been down this road. Michael Brantley's been down this road. The difference is they have been down this road, so now you have that foundation to maybe lean on. You know, Michael Brantley can maybe more realistically know what he's feeling now in relation to what he thought he was feeling a year ago. And I think from all accounts, from talking to people behind the scenes, especially in terms of Brantley's body language and the way he's acting, everyone's very positive about things they're seeing, not just on the field, but what they're seeing behind the scenes with him to make them feel like, yeah, okay, this time, you know, maybe it's a little more realistic.
You mentioned third base situation, second base situation. The second base situation is now the third base situation with Jason Kipnis out of the picture. And we know we have a more finite, although nothing's ever finite, you know, with medicals, but it sounds like a fairly finite picture of 4 to 5 weeks until he's back in major league game action. And as an offshoot of that, now they're talking about Jose Ramirez at second base,
right?
Which is something they had talked about not doing initially, which would make the competition more at third base. So now, what are your expectations at third base?
Yeah, and I think that was when they were talking about they really would prefer to keep Jose at third, and I think they still do. Yeah. But that was when they weren't sure if this was going to be like Kipnis misses the first series or the first road trip. Now that they know it might be mid-April or later April, just because he needs to get that volume of he needs to have a spring training. Now you can think more realistically about, okay, this is not just a one-series or two-series fix. So now you move Jose to second where it's really not even that much of a transition for him. Maybe his most natural position, and now you look at third base and the options there. As I mentioned earlier, Giovanni Urshela is an option. Non-roster guy like Richie Schaefer is an option. Yandy Diaz, the Indians' Twitter fan favorite, would be a guy they're looking at mostly because of his bat. He's a really advanced bat, but defensively, he worked maybe more in the outfield last year and early in spring. They're trying to get him in third base a lot more now down the stretch because they want to see, you know, is he still a quote-unquote work in progress at third? And then a guy like Eric Gonzalez who could be in the mix as a utility guy or at third because, you know, as Terry Francona has said, you know, he's really, really strong defensively no matter where you put him. And I think defense may be some of the priority here in a short-term situation like this because, you know, I think as Tito mentioned today, you're not going to replace Kipnis's offense, but if you know you can help the run prevention by having a really trustworthy guy at third, you know, that might be the priority, and that's where maybe like Urshela or Gonzalez have the edge.
Yeah, I think it'll be Urshela. Reading the tea leaves and the priority on defense, a guy who's been, I mean, Gonzalez has been up in the big leagues before as well, but guy has a little more of a big league backbone in his history, it seems to make some sense. It seems like they're going out of their way to talk about why Diaz is not ready defensively.
Right.
Which is always...
Well, and you also have to consider the logistics of it.
Yeah.
He's not on the roster.
Exactly.
He's still considered a prospect.
Yeah.
Like, Richie Schaefer's not on the roster, but he's sort of moved beyond that prospect stage. And if you're going to put a guy on the roster and start his clock, and it's only for 2 weeks, that's not really how you want to handle the development of a player.
Right.
You want a Yandy Diaz type, when he comes up, to be up. You know, Gio Urshela has already been in the big leagues. He was their third baseman for 81 games in 2015. So he kind of has more of an expectation and maybe less pressure on him because he's not coming up and getting that taste of it for the first time and dealing with it that way. Or even Richie Schaefer, who's been in the big leagues for parts of two seasons with Tampa Bay. And maybe you can hope a guy like that could get hot for 2 weeks and then be optioned down to the minors as a sound depth guy. So when you weigh those factors, who's on the 40, who's not on the 40, who's still a prospect, who's still developing, and who could be potential fill-ins, you're right. Like, it doesn't really add up to Yandy Diaz. Even if, of that group, he might be the best hitter, the most polished hitter, there's still development there to do, and you don't want to throw a guy out there and have him have a bad week and have it snowball and things like that. They're going to consider all those factors when making this decision.
Yeah, a two or three week trial, it seems to make the most sense to let's just take care of ourselves defensively. This guy can catch the ball. who really cares what he contributes offensively? That's, I don't know. That seems to be the most reasonable way to approach it, and the roster logistics play into that. All right, speaking of roster logistics, there were some moves earlier this week. And among the guys sent out to minor league camp, you know, who stands out as potential, you know, we might see in the big leagues this season?
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the benefits of the WBC is it allows teams to get maybe a longer, closer look at players that they wouldn't under normal spring circumstances. And that's where guys like Greg Allen, who's a center field prospect, and Ronnie Rodriguez, a utility prospect, really factored in for the Indians this spring. They really got to take a close look and get to know both of those guys. You know, Allen might be two seasons away, but they really are impressed with him off the field and really with his offense and his plus defense. And then Ronnie Rodriguez a couple years ago, you know, he looked like a rising prospect. And then as Jose Ramirez rose and Lindor rose, he kind of got blocked all around the diamond, similar to Eric Gonzalez. So, you know, even with Kipnis at second base. So he's a guy who kind of tried to hone his craft as a utility man to show that, you know, maybe he could be a bench option. And they wanted to get a good look at him this spring and were impressed. And Tito even said today, like, this he has a future in the big leagues. And part of it is because of that willingness to embrace that utility role. So those guys, while they're not a part of the picture this year, it was kind of fun to see them for an extended period, and good for the Indians to get a close look at them in big league camp as they sort of map out the, you know, down the road.
Yeah, Allen, a kind of somewhat overlooked piece of that would-be Jonathan Lucroy
right.
trade, because, you know, obviously, you know, Francisco Mejia had the 53-game hitting streak, which attracted a lot of attention. He was kind of the centerpiece of the deal, but Allen would have been a part of the deal that as well. And then Ryan Merritt sent out. Our boy Ryan Merritt, who stepped up on the October
Boots.
Stage. Boots Merritt. You've mentioned this before, but they're kind of holding him up as the organizational example of don't focus so much on the opening day 25. And this is for the fans as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Don't focus too much on who you're trotting out there on April 3rd because you don't know what's going to happen over the course of the season.
Right, and I think it's, you know, every team at the start of spring will tell a certain select number of players, hey, you might not be in the opening day mix, but this takes more than 25 men and blah, 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 blah. And it all sounds so very cliche, and some players may roll their eyes a little bit when they're hearing this from the manager or the GM. But when you, as the Indians now, can point to last season and say Ryan Merritt was in Arizona in, I think, in September or October, working yeah. out, and he got a phone call that they needed him to pitch against the Blue Jays with a chance to go to the World Series. And, you know, I think so they can now send him to AAA. He's gone through that experience. And the guys in that Columbus clubhouse can look to him or even talk to him about that idea that, yeah, you might think the big leagues feel far away when you've got Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco, and those guys ahead of you in the rotation, or Lindor, Kipnis, and Ramirez, and those guys in the infield, or Michael Brantley coming back. But then you realize, you know, sometimes you're an injury away or circumstances away from, you know, being called up. And they've got now guys like Merritt, guys like Clevinger, even Plutko and Morimondo played roles on a much lesser scale. You know, those guys who got sent out can be those examples for the minor leaguers. And also, when the Indians are giving that message to players, now they have concrete examples they can point to. And I think that does nothing but benefit a team.
Could you imagine being Ryan Merritt in that scenario, by the way? I'm just thinking about that because we're here in Goodyear. And, I mean, you can look out for, you know, miles at a time and not see a two-story building.
Right.
You know, you're here so isolated. And then next thing you know, you're on a plane to Toronto to pitch in the American League.
In the
League
Rogers Center.
Unbelievable.
In the playoffs, in that atmosphere. It was pretty incredible what he was able to do last year. That was one of my favorite stories of the entire season.
Absolutely. All right, some more good stories ahead. Jordan Bastion will be all over them for MLB.com. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. It's been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Chicago White Sox. I'm here with Scott Merkin. We are in beautiful Tempe, Arizona today. And, Merk, we're standing on a rooftop at Tempe Diablo Stadium. Almost just got killed by a foul ball. There is a dead bird about 30 yards away from us that might have been the victim of a previous foul ball. This is quite a place.
We've taped in some interesting spots. We taped in that the research room at
right.
Progressive Field and probably at the winter meetings at some point. But I don't think we ever taped on a rooftop in the heat near a dish and a dearly departed bird. So this is a first for us.
Yeah, our heart goes out to the Birds family.
Yes, and friends, of course.
But good news and better news, your Michigan Wolverines are moving on to the Sweet 16.
And at the time we tape this, by the time it runs, they'll still be alive. That's the good news. They play Thursday, I think, against the winner of Oregon, Rhode Island. Pretty amazing story. I mean, the best thing about it is that they had that horrible incident with the plane, and no one got hurt. You know, I guess Derek Walton, their point guard, who played like an All-American in the last seven games, had some stitches. But thank God no one got hurt out of it. And they've, not to play on words, but they seem to have found a new life since then. They're 7-0 since then and just playing great basketball. So we'll see how long it runs. Rick Pitino referred to them as the Golden State Warriors, and they shot like that against Oklahoma State. Not so much against Louisville, but hey, survive in advance, right, at this time of year. Ohio U didn't make it. Now, that was a bad upset for Michigan a few years ago when they lost to Ohio U. Someone considered it an upset. I know you guys.
I did not consider it an upset.
But it was a bad loss for Michigan. It was a bad loss for the first round of the tournament.
Absolutely. Maybe someday you'll get your rematch there. But yeah, Michigan survives. And Merck, you survived yet another birthday. Happy birthday to you. I'm sure all of our podcast listeners wish you the best.
I appreciate
in another
that.
Year.
It was a great birthday weekend, punctuated by a couple Michigan wins. It's sad when that's what I'm looking for my birthday, isn't it? I should probably shoot a little. Nothing against the great alma mater, but probably shoot a little higher than a couple Michigan tournament wins as my birthday celebration. But it was a good birthday in the searing heat of Arizona here.
Hey, this is a wonderful place to celebrate a birthday.
It is.
Let's talk about a little baseball. Yoan Moncada, actually, we're recording this just at the tail end of a game between the White Sox and Angels. Moncada with 2-for-4 today. He's hitting 300 for the spring. Just what have been your general impressions of this kid in his first camp with the Sox?
I mean, I've joked about this before. I think I've said it on the podcast. He's an amazing athlete who probably could play defensive back for the Bears if he wasn't a baseball player. But he's got just such great raw athleticism that I think when, you know, the baseball skills get sharpened, he'll be a great force for the team. Now, you know, they have him at second. Who knows if it's going to stay at second or if he's going to end up at third, or I've heard some people even say center field, but their goal is second baseman. He's the second baseman of the future. And I think you saw a little bit of that when they, you know, designated Brett Laurie, that, you know, they have very solid players there right now in Tyler Saladino and Leury Garcia and Yolmer Sanchez, but that spot is opened up for Moncada. It's interesting because, and you've probably thought about this over the time you've covered baseball, is you think about Kopech threw 102 miles an hour and struck out five Cubs in two innings, and you think, well, why not let him start the season? You know, how could it hurt if you pitch him in the bullpen for a year and let him learn there? And the same with Moncada. You wonder, you know, if he played at the major league level, would he be able to be competitive? But that's not my decision, and they're all going to pretty much start in the minor leagues begin this year.
Yeah, and that's the safe play. But speaking of Kopech, I was over at Cubs camp the other day, and Joe Maddon was very impressed. Obviously, how could you not be from that particular outing? But he actually compared him to Aroldis Chapman in terms of the life of the ball. You know, the last, I think he said the last 10 or 20 feet before it hits the catcher's mitt. So an interesting comparison there, but obviously a good comparison.
I was glad to see Joe opened up a little bit and was willing to talk
about
it.
It's rare, hard
to pry him, you know, to get his thoughts on that. No, he's great. Great manager, great guy. But, I think the Sox have great options there. I mean, you're going to pitch Kopech as a starter until he can prove that he either is a great starter or he's not. But, I mean, think about if you have a bullpen in the future of, you know, let's say Nate Jones is still there because they have him under contract, I think, for 5 years with the options. But you have him and Zach Birdie, who pitched well today, came in and pitched out of a first and third jam. And then even Kopech as a reliever. Now, of course, Kopech would be even infinitely more valuable as a starter. But you have a lot of options. There's some definite versatility the Sox have already added in some depth, which is what they were absolutely missing last year. And that's why it went from 23-10 to 33-36 in the snap of a finger, because guys started getting hurt. Nothing against the guys that came up, but they just weren't good enough to keep that going. And now I think the Sox are doing that. And, you know, it's Kopech's an example of the guy they picked up. They can't survive on trades alone, so it's going to have to be international signings. Yeah. Nick Hostetler had a great first, and his crew had a great first draft in 16, so adding those guys in. But, you know, Kopech is electric stuff. I mean, I've heard people talk about that. You know, his stuff is some of the best they've seen. He was by far the best pitcher in the fall league, and he's been pretty darn impressed out here. Very confident kid, too, and you should be. When you can throw 102 miles an hour, I guess, doesn't really matter who you're facing if you're on your game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can pave over a lot of mistakes when it's coming at 102.
No question.
You mentioned, you can't just build through the trades. You got to build it through the draft and internationally. But speaking of the draft, Carlos Rodon was obviously a prominent draft pick in recent years. We saw him today, a sharp four innings of work for Carlos Rodon. And, you know, he finished last season so strong, it feels like he's kind of turned the corner.
Yeah, you know, he did that at the end of the year before, too, and then, you know, had kind of the slow start. So we'll see if he can build on that. And they've done a good job with him. I think everyone had the curiosity factor, because even at the beginning when they were doing PFPs, you know, pitcher's fielding practice, he wasn't even throwing the ball to first. So everyone thought, I mean, they wouldn't throw him if something was wrong, but everyone thought, oh, he might be a little sore, there might be a little issue, but they were just taking their time with him because, you know, what's the point of burning, especially in a year where they're not going to say this, but they're not planning to contend and they're not planning to be in it. Why burn innings when, you know, you can save them for the season? So as we tape this, it was his first Cactus League start. Great appearance, 4 innings, 1 hit, 65 pitches, 38 strikes, 5 strikeouts, struck out Mike Trout looking. He had a great little battle of 7 pitches with Albert Pujols and ended with a little cue shot into right field against the shift. He did a nice job. He looked like, you know, like you said, at the end of last year, the way Rodon looked like. And Rick Renteria, the White Sox manager, talked a little bit about having him maximize his pitches, you know, not throwing as many. His pitch counts could get a little high through 5 or 6 innings, and he'd be a 6 or 7 inning guy. 7 would be lucky some of the time. So that's one of the things they want him to work on. So, you know, next it looks like starting, as we tape this, the Friday before the last Friday of spring training against the A's in Mesa, and then the last game of the Cactus League for the Sox against San Diego, and then we don't know. Nothing's really been announced in terms of the rotation for the regular season yet.
All right. Well, I would imagine Jose Quintana is a.
It would be. You would think it would be shocking. I mean, as great a kid as he is, as great a pitcher he is, as much great talk as they have about him, I think if they trade him, they may still start him on opening day. That there's so much love for Quintana in that organization. So they haven't announced it yet, but I would be. It would be one of the more stunning moments of the 16 years I've covered baseball if Jose Quintana is here as part of this team and not starting on April 3rd against the Tigers at home.
He's obviously back from the World Baseball Classic. Yes. What were his thoughts on that experience and now turning the
page? He loved it. I mean, I remember talking to him last March when they qualified, and he was so excited. I think he wanted to pitch for them in the qualifier, and the Sox kind of, you know, weren't. And I think they had agreed he wouldn't do that, but that he would be part of this if they qualified. And he did a phenomenal. I mean, you know, hit that All-Star lineup for 5 2/3 innings. Yeah. Now, granted, his adrenaline was probably flowing a little bit more, and you know, he's just so consistent. I was talking to Zach Putnam today. As we tape this, and he was saying that he's seen him throw bullpens where he's hit 30 straight spots in a row, 30 out of 30.
Yeah.
And that it's, he's just, his mechanics are almost flawless, and that's why he's just so sharp all the time. You know, again, I know people, especially sabermetric people, hate the win factor for pitchers, but I think if he had a few more, you'd know a little bit more about him. But people do know about Jose Quintana. He was an All-Star last year, and I think, you know, he's a guy that Sox could get a lot for, but they could also build around in this rebuild, too. So it'll be interesting to see how what they do moving forward.
Yeah, it could go either way. I've proposed that. It might make sense to if you're not getting that overwhelming deal, that's certainly a guy you can build around.
Well, I guess one of the main reasons why he's still here, besides that he's a great kid and a great pitcher, is that they haven't gotten that overwhelming deal for him yet.
And just to demonstrate that sometimes those overwhelming offers or those attractive offers don't always pan out as planned, there's Avi Garcia.
Right.
Who I know you were expecting big things from last season, I know from previous podcasts. Did not happen for Avi last year, but he slimmed down this spring. What are your thoughts on him going into
2017? Well, I know fans are tired of hearing the best shape. I trust me, I hear it on Twitter as soon as
he is an annual
there,
best shape of my
but
life
he,
guy.
He said he's in, you know, he's at 250, although someone pointed out to me today the media guide list is less than that, but we're going to go by what he said. He wants to go by to 247. He's in good shape. He really is in good shape. And, you know, I think he has underachieved. I don't know if he'd say that himself, but he has. He was the cornerstone of the last rebuild attempt, which was kind of a half rebuild, half try and contend, when they had the three-team trade with Detroit and Boston that sent Peavy to the Red Sox and Iglesias to the Tigers. And then, you know, he tore up his shoulder diving for a ball in Colorado his first full year with the Sox. That cost him developmental time. Last year he was a DH, and, you know, one of the people in the Sox organization said, "It's you don't give enough credit to the veterans who handle that spot."
Mm-hmm.
So he's 24 and trying to handle it.
Yeah.
But this is his year. He's got, you know, you can only go so long saying he's got to do it. This has got to be the year he produces. So we'll see what happens. He's going to be back out in right field for a large amount of the time. We'll see how he responds.
He hit well with runners in score
position. Great with runners in score position. Yeah, I think he hit 345 and then 455 with runners in score position and 2 outs. So if he can carry that philosophy where he just kind of says he doesn't focus on anything but just trying to get a good pitch to hit, seems simple, into the whole season, then you may have some there. Because he certainly is an immensely gifted athlete. It's just got to translate into results, too.
All right, there you have it. The latest on the Chicago White Sox. On behalf of Scott Merkin and the dead bird up here on the
and
template.
The Wolverines. That's not
and the Wolverines, right. Of course. I want to thank you for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. This has been MLB.com Extras.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Detroit Tigers. And I'm joined, as I am each and every week, by Jason Beck from Lakeland, Florida. Beck, how's it going out there in Florida? How's the spring treated you? It's been a long one.
It's been a long one, but at the same time, it seems like it's flown by pretty fast. I mean, you kind of know the Groundhog Day effect of doing the same schedule every day, not really traveling a whole ton except for driving trips every now and then. It's gone by. It's been an interesting one, but at the same time, there haven't been a whole lot of spots up for grabs.
Right. Well, I think one thing that illustrates the sheer length of the spring training camp is Anibal Sanchez, because at one time, he seemed like maybe one of their biggest concerns in camp. And now, these last couple of weeks, he's one of their biggest, sources of intrigue and excitement, just the way he's been, the way he's improved on the mound. So we talked a little bit about, what's gone into that, mechanically or just the thought process. But how do you sum up Anibal Sanchez's kind of yin and yang spring here?
I'd say it's gone from blind hope to despair to cautious optimism.
Yeah.
I think that kind of covers it. the funny thing is, not like there's been a drastic difference in the way he pitches. The velocity didn't suddenly take a big jump. He's thrown the fastball like 89 to 91. He did peak out at 93 on Monday. But by and large, he's been in the same range with his pitches the whole spring. I think that the one significant difference was that once he got over the disappointment that all the work he put in the offseason didn't add a whole lot on that fastball, you kind of saw him come around to the idea that it's time to start learning how to do more with less. And I don't think the Tigers have doubted that he could do that, but I think a lot of it had to deal with him mentally being willing to do that. In other words, like, when spring training started, you had the fastball, like I said, but you saw a lot of off-speed stuff that was just a couple ticks off of that, a lot of stuff that was around the same, like 85, 86 miles an hour. I think what you've seen the last couple starts was that stuff going down, which is actually a good thing because it creates more of a difference on his pitches. He gets a little bit more movement, and you see a lot more hitters fooled right now, and that you're seeing a lot more tentative approaches, a lot more called strikes. And I think what's really big for him is that you're starting to see more swinging strikes. He's got, 8 scoreless innings on 2 hits, but he's got 10 strikeouts in that same span, which to me is really surprising. Now, we'll see if he can keep it up. And it's one thing to do that in spring training. It's another thing to carry that on a full season. But at the very least now, he's created enough intrigue about this that you can see him making the squad easily and at least earning some patience for the Tigers to at least keep him on the bullpen spot, if not maybe even put him in that fifth spot in rotation.
Beck, what's the latest on J.D. Martinez? We know he had that mid-foot sprain. How serious is that situation?
Yeah, that's kind of also been kind of a back and forth.
Right.
Brad Ausmus said originally he wasn't willing to say anything about it because he didn't want to mislead anybody. He wanted to get something definitive from a specialist before he sent anything. And then we come to find out that the specialist wants to do a further exam that's going to take a few more days. And so at that point, Brad, without saying a specific diagnosis, said that at least from what he gathers, he's not all that worried about it. He doesn't believe it's serious, and that this is just kind of being thorough to kind of make sure they're not missing anything. It's a weird way to go about being extra cautious, to kind of wait 4 or 5 extra days to do an extra test, but it's not out of character with what the Tigers have done in recent years. I think they've gone on the side of being thorough with major injuries and having guys get stuff double-checked and getting second opinions from extra specialists to make sure that what they've originally diagnosed isn't completely off. And I don't know if that comes from what happened with Iglesias a few years ago where, it looked like shin splints and then it came out to be stress fractures and missing the whole season. But I think that was one of those situations that kind of lent itself to erring on the side of caution.
Beck, I don't know if you could hear the siren here. I'm over at D-backs camp as we record this, and I just wanted the listeners to know those sirens are not meant to illustrate the fan reaction to J.D. Martinez's injury. It's supposed to be those are just real sirens. So
You will get that from time to time in Lakeland, but that's not Lakeland in this.
Nick Castellanos in the tool hole, has that morphed from possibility to more of a certainty at this point?
You know, I wrote about it on Monday, and I think it's a very strong possibility right now. What interests me is that it almost feels like Brad Ausmus is using it as a challenge. It's almost like a carrot to dangle out there in front of Castellanos to get him to commit to becoming the type of hitter that Brad would like him to be. He kind of laid it out there. He said he hasn't heard his case, but he said it's one thing to do the things you need to do to be that effective two-hitter for 6 weeks in spring training. It's another thing to commit to it game in, game out for a full season. And when he said that, it reminded me of when Jim Leland was harping on Miguel Cabrera to be more consistent with his at-bats and not give away at-bats. And he talked about, I'll never forget it, you know, Leland talking about how Cabrera could be the best hitter in the game if he would just commit to it. And the way he got him to do it was say, okay, just try it for 2 weeks. If you don't like it, no big deal. But, you know, I just want you to try it out, see how you feel at the plate. And if it yields some good results and you feel comfortable with it, then maybe we're on to something. This kind of feels like that to me, that this has kind of become this vehicle for Brad Ausmus to get Nick to do some of the things that maybe they've been wanting to do for a little while and do some of those things that you see hitters at this stage of Nick's career commit to take that next step as a hitter. Because I think we've all seen a lot of signs of Nick maybe being on the verge of a breakout season here, but you got to be able to take that in the regular season. And right now, I think that number two spot is kind of becoming that way for the Tigers to get him to be more consistent with it.
One last thing back. Matt Boyd, that's another one. Has that morphed from possibility to more of a certainty as far as Matt Boyd claiming the number five spot in the rotation?
Well, like about 13 other things in camp, Brad's not committing to it. But he did say, when we asked him about that fifth spot, he did say the other day that Boyd has probably pitched the best of any of the candidates. And I think that in itself is a big statement. He's put them in a position where if you're whether you're looking at this team as a team that's going younger or if you look at this squad as a team that's making one more run to win this year, I think Boyd has put himself in a position to be the answer to that fifth rotation spot in either scenario. He's really pitched well. He's committed to doing some things a little differently. He's put some tweaks on. He's reacted to hitters. He looks like a complete package as a pitcher right now, and a guy who can get them some deep, reliable starts on a pretty consistent basis, which, oddly enough, is something that I think he offers more consistency than even what Anibal Sanchez can do right now or Mike Pelfrey or any of the other veteran options they might have. So I've really been impressed with the way Boyd has gone about camp, and I think he's kind of taken that next step to becoming not just a talented young pitcher, but a guy who's maturing pretty quickly.
All right, there you have it. The latest from Jason Beck. We'll check in with him one more time from spring training camp next week, and then, of course, talk with him each week during the regular season as well. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. It's been MLB.com Extras, Detroit Tigers edition.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Castrovince, and this is our weekly look at the Kansas City Royals. And I'm here with Jeffrey Flanagan. We are in Scottsdale, Arizona. Royals made the trip over from Surprise. Jeffrey, you've been in Arizona for a bit. How's the state treating you? You still a fan of Arizona after, what is it, 6-7 weeks?
It's time to go. Love it, but it's time to go.
Yeah, getting to be very close. And you know you're getting close when actual decisions start to be made and actual announcements are made. And you're not just asking the same questions over and over and over. The Royals have made a decision with their last rotation spot. It'll go to Nate Karns, and probably not a major surprise. Obviously, they like this guy. That's why they traded for him.
Yeah, he's got that power arm and a lot of potential, a pretty high ceiling. And really, it fits the ball club better to have him in the rotation. because Chris Young and Travis Wood could easily, more easily transition to the bullpen. Nate Karns tried it a little bit last year. It didn't work out that well. I think just in the big picture, this is better overall fit for them to have Chris Young and Travis Wood. And you know, it's a long season, Anthony, and one of these guys, or both of them, Young and Wood, will probably end up starting some games this year because you still have Jason Vargas coming off TJ surgery from 2015. So, you know, a lot of things can happen. Chris Young has shown he can transition pretty easily back into a starting role. Travis Wood's done it before. So just overall, it's not a surprise. It was just probably the proper fit.
And how did, I mean, Chris Young, obviously veteran player, I'm sure he'd like to be in the rotation. How'd he take that?
Well, we actually haven't spoken to him yet. So, yeah, he's a proud guy. And, you know, Travis Wood, too, one of the reasons he signed with the Royals was to get an opportunity to start again. And that's not going to happen right away. But like I said, for both of those guys, they both are veterans. They know it's a long season.
Yeah.
They'll get their opportunities.
Yeah, always got to keep that in mind. Opening day rosters are not exactly written in cement.
No, they're pretty fluid.
Well, the second base job is probably now the chief source of intrigue. It might have been even before the rotation announcement was made. Pretty wide open competition there still.
Yeah, and you know, early in camp, Raul Mondesi, you know, one of their top prospects, if not the top prospect, just forced himself into the equation. It wasn't really a name we were thinking a ton about because he still has options left, but he's been so good down here and gives them so much more athleticism that you just have to consider it. Now, the problem is, and I do think he's kind of outplaying those guys, right? It's competition right now, but it all comes down to roster construction. Chesler Cuthbert, Christian Colon are out of options. The Royals, like all teams, love to hang on to their inventory. They're not just going to release one of those guys or dump it in a bad trade. You know, and you have Whit Merrifield, who does have options, but he's such a great super utility guy that Ned could really use him on the 25-man because he can move him everywhere. So that's the question they have. And also the other thing is you want to keep developing Raul Mondesi. He needs every day at bats. Will he get those at the big league level? There are just so many questions, too. I mean, we saw Raul Mondesi get called up last year in August, September, looked completely overmatched at times. Do you believe these numbers down here? You know, he's really hitting the ball well, but it is spring training. He's pitching against guys who won't make the 25-man roster for their team. So all those factors are going into it. Ned told me today this decision is probably going to go right down to the end.
Yeah, has he made some kind of major change at the plate, or is it just a matter of he's gained some confidence?
Confidence,
yeah.
You know, we've talked to Ned about it. You know, that call-up last year, August, September, allowed him to kind of, you know, stew on it during the offseason about what it takes to be in the big leagues and what he's going to have to improve on. I haven't seen any major difference in his swing. He's just more confident guy. He's more outgoing. I think he realizes, hey, this is what it takes to get to the big leagues, and here's what I got to do, and he's trying to do it.
Yeah, it's amazing what confidence can do in this game. The last bullpen spot, what's going to happen there?
Wow. Another toughie because, you know, you still got a lot of they did finally release Jonathan Sanchez and Brandon Lee, but they still have a lot of reclamation projects in there. You also have Scott Alexander, who's on the 40-man. He's got the edge there. But he's another left-handed pitcher. They've already got three lefties in the bullpen. Do you need a fourth? Who knows? You got Peter Moylan, who's not on the 40, signed a minor league deal, but they know what he can do. He pitched 50 games for him last year. Gives him a different look with the, you know, kind of sidewinding submarine style. But they'd have to, like, you know, shuffle up the 40-man to get him back on it. And then there's a kid named Yonder Caramo, who's 25 years old, led the Texas League in ERA last year, great sinker baller guy, does not get a lot of strikeouts, but gets the ball in play, gets it on the ground. They love that about him. Again, he's not on the 40. And then, like I mentioned, you have all these other reclamation projects still in camp, the Bobby Parnells and the Albuquerques and those guys. So, again, I think that's another decision that's going to come right down to the end.
Salvador Perez, obviously we talked about before, the Royals dodged a major bullet there with that injury in the World Baseball Classic, and that pulled him out of the World Baseball Classic early, which in a way is a benefit right there, but obviously it was his elbow and not his knee that was the more precarious situation there.
Right.
He's back in the lineup this week at DH, but what does the timetable look like for him as far as being behind the plate and in time for opening day?
He's going to be fine. He's going to probably catch six innings on Friday as we speak here on Tuesday. Going to DH tomorrow on Wednesday. Then they have an off day on Thursday. He's ready to go now, Ned said, and Sal told me that as well. He's been catching so many bullpens on the side here that there's been no restrictions. The elbow's fine. The knee's fine. He's good to go.
How about Mike Moustakas? You know, we're here at Salt River Fields. He's in the lineup today. He's a guy who's traditionally lit up the Cactus League. That's kind of his background. But just coming off the injury last year, the knee surgery, what's his state of mind and how's his performance been?
Well, his performance has been really good. He looks like the same guy he was before the injury. He's making really good lateral movement defensively at third base. He's been picking up his hitting lately. He was hitting a lot of hard balls right at people, but he's got a couple homers. He had a big homer Sunday night. Looks like the same swing, and Ned's got to decide where he's going to hit him in the order now. He had so much success 2 years ago in the number two spot. I would not be shocked if he's back up there again. The only thing we know for sure is Kane will hit third, Haas will hit fourth. Mm. But I suspect Moose will probably hit second. Then depending on who wins that second base job, that guy could be leading off or it could be Alex Gordon. But anyway, back to Moose. He's been terrific all spring. They're going to bring him on a little bit slowly. They've got a couple built-in off days when the season begins. So you'll still see him a ton at third base.
Now you said maybe the second base guy is in leadoff. Maybe Alex Gordon's in leadoff. Are the Alcides Escobar's days in leadoff?
It could still happen because I think he's let off before he went to the WBC. Let off a bunch of times down here, which is a little misleading because they're just trying to get guys at bat, right. So they put them up in the order. But I don't know. Of course, that's a big burning question for Royals fans who just roll their eyes when they see Esky in that leadoff spot. But we'll see. Ned can be shockingly a little stubborn about that stuff sometimes. But ultimately, he'll put the best guy he thinks fits for the leadoff spot.
One last thing, Jeffrey. As we said, the Royals are here today playing the Diamondbacks and former Diamondbacks property Peter O'Brien in the lineup. What's his spring been like? Obviously, he stands out in one particular department.
Yeah, the Babe. I mean, he hits some amazing home runs. He's got so much power. You just don't throw a fastball near the plate to him. He's got, I think, six or seven. I think he might be leading the Cactus League right now. I haven't looked lately. But every time, and a lot of them are pinch hit home runs. He's going to, it's almost impossible task to crack the 25 man unless they make some trades or something like that. But he's got options. He's got two options. So he could actually, they could get 1,000 ABs of development in Omaha if they really wanted to. But if he goes down to Omaha and tears it up down there, they really don't have a full-time DH. They've told us that Brandon Moss will be kind of a floating DH outfield backup for his baseman. So who knows? I mean, if he goes to Omaha and hits 25 homers by the All-Star break, they'll have to do something because he certainly can mash the ball down here.
All right, there you have it. Jeffrey Flanagan mashed this podcast. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning
live,
in.
Live, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. Live. This is a special event. We'll check in with you again next week on MLB.com Extras, Kansas City Royals edition.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Castro-Prince, and this is our latest look at the Minnesota Twins, and I'm joined by Rhett Bollinger. Rhett, it's been a long camp, and but some late developments on the injury front, or at least some updates on the injury front. Let's start with Ryan O'Rourke. Left-handed reliever. Sounds like he's going to start the season on the DL. What's the timetable for O'Rourke?
Yeah, O'Rourke right now, he got diagnosed with a strain basically in his flexor pronator mass, which obviously sounds a little bit hard to pronounce and all that. But really what it is kind of the muscle that kind of attaches your forearm to your elbow. The good news is it's not a ligament. It's not the UCL. All that stuff came back clean. But it's sore enough that he's got to take off about 7 to 10 days from throwing before he starts the new throwing program and all that. So I think kind of looking forward here, today's the 21st. By the time you might start throwing, it might be right around the season kind of starts here. So you got to figure to open the year on the disabled list. He was probably more of a long shot to make the roster anyway. He's definitely had success in the majors against left-handers. He's still kind of working on, kind of getting right-handers out. The big thing this spring that he was kind of working on was adding kind of more of like a split finger pitch. So you kind of wonder if that maybe added some of the issues there in kind of the forearm / elbow. But the good news is it's not going to require, like, Tommy John or anything like that. It's just going to be about 10 days of taking off throwing. He'll likely, obviously put in the DL and then probably even be activated at Rochester to kind of get it going. But certainly a guy we could see again this season with the Twins.
Elsewhere in the bullpen, Glenn Perkins. Do we have an update on Glenn Perkins?
Nothing too official yet, but the Twins are definitely going to sit down with Perkins and pitching coach Neil Allen and the training staff to kind of get a better picture here for what to expect. He's been throwing every 4 days here during spring, but really hasn't ramped it up too much. He's been throwing about 20 pitches each time. It hasn't really progressed too much in a sense. He's still kind of got a long road back from the surgery, as we know. The tendon came off the bone, so it's kind of a pretty big surgery for him to have that labrum tear like that. So the plan is to kind of sit with him and talk with him. Obviously, it sounds like he's going to, you know, at least be on the DL throughout the season, but certainly a chance it could be a 60-day DL deal where he'll maybe be, you know, miss the first 2 months of the season. But, yeah, it's going to be kind of something we're going to kind of sit this week and kind of see what's going to happen.
And has the decision been made on Trevor May, or are we waiting on that?
Still waiting. It sounds like Tommy John, he's meeting today, actually, in Texas to get a second opinion. But having talked to him before he left, he was pretty confident that it's going to end up in Tommy John surgery. I think probably the quicker the better, only because, you know, he could maybe try to avoid it with some of the stuff we talked about before, like the platelet-rich therapy and all that kind of stuff. But there's no guarantee that would work, and it sounds like a pretty, you know, standard tear of the UCL. And there's no reason to kind of push it back too much, because if he obviously gets it now, the good thing is at least he could probably be ready by the start of, you know, next season. Whereas if he continues to push it back, you know, maybe he'll have to miss, you know, two seasons or a season and a half, that kind of thing. So I think it's probably in his best interest, and I think we'll find out more from the doctor, but it does sound like he's going to get the Tommy John surgery.
With May out of the mix, obviously there's still a lot of intrigue with that last spot in the rotation. Tyler Duffy and Adalberto Mejia, it sounds like they've both pitched pretty well here recently. What are your thoughts as we head into, you know, the last, what, week and a half or so of camp?
Yeah, Duffy looked really good. I was impressed by him against the Blue Jays, through five scoreless innings, showed good stuff with his breaking ball. And it's kind of a changeup he's kind of working on here. He knows that, you know, he's got to get results. The last thing is his favorite to win the fifth starter spot. And it didn't happen. But part of it is because he's working on that changeup and wasn't really focused on results. But this time he knows that he kind of has to do that. Still a chance he could go to the bullpen. The Twins are kind of deciding whether or not he'd be a bullpen candidate if he doesn't make the rotation, instead of staying stretched out at AAA. Mejia, though, has been impressive all camp. I think Mejia, if you look at the numbers, is probably the, you know, the top candidate number-wise in terms of being a fifth starter, but he's also a young guy who could easily be off in AAA. Sometimes, you know, roster things kind of come into consideration a little bit too. But, yeah, he's had a really solid camp. I think his ERA has been below two. Yesterday against the Blue Jays, he was throwing 95 miles per hour pretty consistently as a left-hander to go along with his, you know, curveball, slider, and changeup. So he's got a good, you know, mix of pitches. When we saw him last year in his one start against the Royals, you know, it was late in the year. I think it was late August. He must have been a little bit more tired late in the year. And it was kind of his first full season after having a suspension the year before. He was more low 90s, but to see a lefty as big as him, you know, throwing in the mid-90s with a pretty good slider, you're not going to say that he's, you know, CC Sabathia or anything. That's quite the comparison. But he's got that build, and definitely if he can kind of hold up, you know, his stuff throughout his start, he's got a chance here. So those two and Jose Berríos, Ryan Vogelsong are probably the four top candidates for that spot there in the last part of this rotation.
Brett, one guy who's a big source of intrigue coming into this camp because the way things unfolded this winter with, you know, designated for assignment, kept in the organization, Byung-ho Park, now off the 40-man, and comes into camp as a really strong camp. I know you wrote a bit about him for the site here recently, but what are your thoughts on Park and his camp and just his spot on the radar at this point?
He's been their best hitter. I mean, bar none, he's been their best hitter. He's hit four home runs. He's not striking out as much. I think he's only struck out eight times in about 30-something at-bats, and not as bad as last year when it was, you know, quite a bit in the major leagues. The big thing, too, is catching up the velocity. He's hitting, you know, balls that are over 95 miles per hour for home runs, which is a good sign, because last year he only had one hit all year on a pitch that was above 95 miles per hour. The power's absolutely legit. We saw it last year as well. But last year, going through the cultural stuff and everything, too, was a big thing. But having talked to some of his teammates, including Brian Dozier, one of the things they were saying was that really his wrist injury that he suffered kind of, you know, I think it was late April, early May, was really a lot worse than he let on. I think he kind of tried to play through it. He didn't want to make excuses in his first year in the big leagues, but it really was an issue for him. It kind of caused him to, maybe as Dozier said, he kind of cheated the plate where you're kind of maybe swinging, you know, for a fastball a little earlier than he otherwise would, because he's kind of compensating for the injury. But right now he's fully healthy, and he's working smarter. I think the main thing last year, too, was kind of he was so stressed out, he kind of worked himself a little bit too hard. I think that might have led to the injury with his hand, too. I think this year he's coming in with a clear head. He's a little smarter. Obviously had a tough situation not being on the 40-man, but he's playing his way on his roster right now. Kenny's Vargas is still in the competition for that spot as well, but Vargas still has an option left. He could be optioned to AAA, which would easily open up a spot for Park to be added, at least to the 25. He's still got to be added to the 40-man as well, but he's definitely making a strong case to be here on opening day.
All right, should be an interesting last couple weeks there in Twins camp, and Rhett's all over it from MLB.com.
want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Minnesota Twins edition.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.